social and human rights issues are becoming a difficult front line. I think they've for a long time been a difficult front line for the mining sector. This is according to an expert on mining and human rights. Richard Buller is director of the UN Global Compact Network Australia. He says that because of rising conflict in communities over mining, some Australian multinationals have started really taking human rights more seriously. Richard Buller joins me in the breakfast studios. Richard, good morning.
Good morning, Fran.
Many Australian communities have seen firsthand the social side of our mining boom can be complex. You say this has become the new hard front line. What do you mean by that?
Look, I think particularly in the Australian context with miners who are working in Indigenous contexts, some of those mines have been there 30, 40 years. And if you look at the cultural, social, economic rights of those communities, you have to ask some hard questions. Why aren't those communities further along? Why aren't they enjoying a better quality of life, better standards than they are at the moment? And it's a tough one. It's not something that the industry solves by itself. It does require all the actors to get together. But I got to say, I think we're still challenged by finding those solutions. Yet what we've learnt in trying to find those solutions, and you know, there's examples like Newmont and what they've done with the Matu people on the edge of the Western Desert, is it's not about direct jobs in the mine. It's about creating programs that deliver services to the mine where Indigenous people can actually work 1 week a month rather than going in and having to work 12 hours a day, 7 days a week or 14 days straight. So it's about finding culturally appropriate jobs within the sector, servicing the sector.
And it's appropriate because it's not a one-size-fits-all. I mean, there's plenty of Indigenous leaders in recent times or people in recent times saying, give us the full-time jobs. Don't give them to our fly-in, fly-out workers. We're sitting there. We want to work. Different communities responding differently, still challenged in finding these solutions. But would you say that both sides of this particular agreement, the Indigenous communities and the miners, are striking a more mature relationship?
There's no question. We've made huge progress. And a report came out yesterday from the MCA, where if you look at the amount of money that's beginning to be spent on Indigenous businesses, there's some significant money beginning to flow in that direction. Also, in terms of the types of jobs that are now available, you're absolutely right. It's about a spectrum. You know, you've got plenty of Indigenous people that just want that full-time job, yet there's other Indigenous people that are looking to have a relationship with country and culture and law that requires a much greater degree of flexibility. So we need that range.
And what about with the rise of coal seam gas in Australia at the moment? Is there examples there of what you're talking about this new hard front line?
Oh, look, I think for any industry to see significant amount of its resource sterilised, as what's happened in terms of suburban areas and coal seam gas resources in other areas of high value, that suggests that something's gone wrong. You know, there's a fundamental breakdown in distrust there. I guess for the mining industry, what's been really interesting is getting almost a bit of a blowback from that, where long-term solid, good relationships between mines and communities. Those communities are now questioning those mines and going, well, hang on, these coal seam gas guys. It turned out we couldn't trust them, or we still don't know exactly what is or isn't going on. I'm not sure we're actually going to trust you anymore. So show us more. We want to see more of your environmental performance. We want to see more of your social performance.
And given the some of the criticisms of the coal seam gas companies that they haven't really invested socially to prepare the ground, I mean, that's one of the criticisms within Australia. Does that surprise you? I mean, have the mining companies, to put it colloquially, been slow to wake up to the investment that is needed to work with communities to make sure there's a smooth smooth introduction for them and their processes?
Look, I think
because ultimately that's a good business. Deal.
Absolutely good business. And if you look at the future expansion for both oil and gas companies, you know, and the big guys are the ones who are now doing the coal seam gas, I think a lot of the issues are heritage issues, legacy issues from the cowboys who started and proved up coal seam gas. But if you look at the future of the oil and gas companies who are headquartered in Australia and the future of the mining companies who are headquartered in Australia, that's actually overseas. It's in tricky social contexts. And it's the learning that's actually been done in terms of good community relations, and that's been building in Australia. Australia, those relationships have been getting better and better. You know, we've got centres like the Centre for Social Responsibility and Mining at the University of Queensland that's world recognised in terms of turning hard-earned lessons actually into academic knowledge that allows practitioners to leapfrog, not having to make those, you know, those mistakes and learn those hard lessons. Now what we need to do as an industry is actually take that experience and apply it overseas. And that's the trick, because we're going into very difficult developing countries where there's been conflict or there is conflict, poor rule of law. There's a whole range of challenges that make the social side that much harder.
It's 19 to 7 on Breakfast. Our guest this morning is Richard Buller, Director of the UN Global Compact Network Australia. And Richard, you have been involved with putting together a handbook of case studies looking at some of the hardest examples and some of the way some of these have progressed to a pretty positive point. Let's look at Shell. In Nigeria, you talked about the difficulties in overseas places. Almost 20 years ago, you wrote the report that led to Royal Dutch Shell eventually settling with the Ogoni people. Is that how I say that?
Ogoni, that's right.
Of Nigeria. Shell were accused of colluding with the Nigerian government in attacks on the Ogoni. What was the lesson of that time, terrible time, and has it been learned by Shell and others?
Well, it comes back to that tricky context. If you're going into a context as it was back then in Nigeria, the business partner for Shell was the government. That government happened to be a particularly nasty and brutal military dictatorship. And I think that's a challenge. If you're going into a context where your business partner is the military and you get community resistance, you get community protests for whatever reason, your business partner is going to step in and deal with that problem the way they know best, yeah, which is at the end of the gun. So I think that's a challenge for Australian businesses who are looking to some contexts. And frankly, you pick a challenging context anywhere in the world at the moment, any developing country, and I can guarantee you I can find an Australian exploration and mining company active there.
Okay, let's look at the Congo, the DRC, the Chinese-owned but Australian-managed MMG in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The company bought copper mining leases from Anvil Mining, which was linked to a massacre by the military, a massacre back in 2004 where at least 70 locals were massacred. How did MMG implement its commitment to human rights, given that legacy?
And I guess there's probably even more pressure in that sort of legacy to operate, to be seen to be operating well, is to have
Well, that's right. The trust would be non-existent.
Exactly right. And certainly to demonstrate that to other stakeholders, you know, if you think about other parties in Australia who are questioning that Australian management, how are you going about doing that? Number one, they made a commitment to human rights. Then they put in a process of what's called human rights due diligence. So the UN 2 years ago has articulated at international level United Nations guiding principles on business and human rights, and that's what MMG have put into practice. This year they've gone and done human rights risk assessment, so inviting all the employees at that mine site to participate in a process of beginning to understand what it means for a business to respect human rights, particularly at a mine site level, particularly in a context such as Katanga province in the south of the Democratic Republic of Congo.
So that's a textbook approach.
Absolutely. They're doing it by the book in terms of what the United Nations has articulated as, look, if you're going to be a responsible business that respects human rights, these are the steps you're going to take. Now, the other things they've also done is looked at their management of security forces, because you'd appreciate in the TRC, potentially one of your largest negative impacts is how your own security forces behave in relation to that community. And the third thing they've done is put in place a grievance mechanism. So if a community or members have experienced something they believe is a human rights abuse, there needs to be a mechanism for them to begin to seek redress.
Richard, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fran.
Richard Buller, talking about some real progress here in this front by the sounds of it, Director of the UN Global Compact Network Australia.